I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Now it's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about what's in the news and what's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week, our freelance journalist Jimmy Israel. He joins us from Cleveland. In New York City, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre. In Boston, Neil Minkoff. He is a healthcare consultant and contributor to National Review magazine. He's also a trained physician, so if you want to talk about that little cough you can't get rid of, he's right here. And in Washington, D.C., NPR's political editor, the political junkie himself, Ken Rudin. Take it away, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. Hey, fellas, welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, welcome, sluts and prostitutes.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood.
Oh, come on.
Rush Limbaugh said it was okay to say that.
Neil Minkoff, this is your first time in the shop, yeah?
No, second.
Come on,
really?
Man.
Okay, well, welcome back. Forgive me. I'm getting older.
Trash about my own New England Patriots.
Yeah, talk to him about that hit on the head afterwards, okay?
Right, exactly.
Somebody obviously hit Jimmy with.
Clearly. Well, Super Tuesday is behind us, but the race for the Republican presidential nomination, it isn't over yet. It's Saturday Night Fever in Kansas tomorrow, and, well, it's the last dance for somebody, Michelle.
Well, I don't know. That's what we're here to talk about. So tomorrow, caucuses in Kansas. Then Tuesday, Alabama, Hawaii, and Mississippi weigh in. I think most attention focusing on Alabama and Mississippi because a super PAC supporting former Pennsylvania Senator Rick Santorum says it's planning to spend more than $500,000 on ads there. And I just have a clip for you so you can get the flavor of what they're talking about. It's not subtle. Just a little heads up here.
How can Mitt Romney or Newt Gingrich beat Barack Obama when on the vital decisions they're not much different? Like Obama, Gingrich supported individual health insurance mandates and lobbied for Freddie Mac. Mitt created Romney Care, the blueprint for Obamacare. And just like Obama, Romney left Massachusetts $1 billion in debt. Who can win? Rick Santorum.
All right, well, thanks for that, Michelle. Neil Minkoff, does Santorum need a stronger argument to take down frontrunner Mitt Romney?
If he could find one, I just don't see it happening. I mean, the thing that I think is really funny here is that on paper, it looks like some weird version of Glengarry Glen Ross, where you have three salesmen and nobody can close the deal. But if you take a step back and look at it, it's kind of because of the way we look at it. So, you know, maybe Romney and Santorum have sold the same number of houses, but Romney's selling million-dollar houses and Santorum is selling small condos. Because Romney's got over 300 delegates. Santorum has under 100. So a lot of it depends on your perspective going forward, and these smaller states aren't going to be enough for him to help close the gap.
Guy, where's the machine when you need him? All right, Ken Rudin.
Well, yeah.
You're a political junkie, man.
Yeah,
Do you think there's a clear path to the nomination for any of these candidates? Now, man, jump in. You're at the bit, man. Go for it.
Is it time now? Okay.
Well, yes, no, man. It's your time.
Certainly, Romney has the advantage. He has the money. He has the organization. In states like Florida, in states like Ohio, in states like Michigan, and perhaps coming up on March 20th in Illinois. Look, he doesn't win these states big. He doesn't win them. He wins them close. Ohio was a squeaker. Michigan was much closer than anybody expected, but he still won. I mean, we could talk about, you know, whether he should have won by a bigger margin. Should John F. Kennedy beaten Richard Nixon by more than 100,000 votes in 1960, sure. But the thing is, you know, look, he'll never win over these strong Tea Party-backed conservatives who just don't trust him from all the pro-choice, pro-gay rights stuff he said in the past. The real issue right now, at least as of this next week, is whether Newt Gingrich remains viable. And if he doesn't win in Alabama and Mississippi, it's hard to see the argument for him going on.
You know what, Michelle? What you call this Saturday Night Fever? This is Saturday Night Fever. No Tony Manero. The GOP, they keep underwhelming me and the rest of the electorate with their lack of a big idea. Gingrich is trying to stay alive. Santorum wants to know how deep the love is, but it's going to be the last dance. I'm sorry for somebody. Somebody's not going to be happy. Somebody's not going to leave with the trophy.
Well, but I still have to ask, though. Still have to ask Ken, though. What's the rationale? I mean, you can't miss the fact that this race is being funded to this point by by very few people. So the question you have to ask is, if they had to rely on a broader network of fundraisers, would these other guys keep going? But so set that aside. The rules are that, you know, one guy who really believes in you, who happens to have a lot of money, can keep you going. But still, what's the rationale for everybody else for why these guys should keep going? Is there one?
Well, Newt Gingrich insists that Rick Santorum can't win in November. He's too conservative. He's too far to the right. He's too unaccommodating. The argument against Rick Santorum is that Newt Gingrich is that he has more baggage than American Airlines. He has all the things in his past. You know, I understand that if he were elected president, Callista would be third lady. I mean, not first lady. You know? So there's so many things. It's in the official rules. And of course, Romney has the problem that just nobody trusts his ideological bearings.
Well, I wanted to ask Neil about this because, Neil, you're in Massachusetts, which Mitt Romney served as governor, one of his home states, I guess we could sort of put it this way. And the roots of the argument that he can't be trusted kind of date back to his time there, where many people say, look, he made certain promises as governor, and then he flipped completely to the right or moved so far to the right, they don't even recognize the man anymore. So I just wanted to ask you, how is he viewed there now? He did win Massachusetts in the primary, but how is he viewed
winning
now?
The Republican Massachusetts primary is like being the tallest
Canadian. It's like being Canadian, right?
Yeah, so that's not a huge thing. But to me, this is why I think everybody's going forward, including Mitt, which is that everybody who's left standing at this point has made some serious changes in their positions over the years, including the man who's going to be running on the Democratic side, has made some very significant policy changes from being the candidate to being the elected official. And if you're saying that Mitt Romney has changed his position over time, that puts him in pretty good company.
Except for Ron Paul. We should point that out. Ron Paul has not changed his views. He still supports all 13 states. And the problem is that despite having not changed his view, he has not won. He's the only one of the 21 states not to have won a single primary or caucus.
But he seems to be to advance his ideas, though. I don't think he thinks he can win. I don't think there's any idea here. Pablo, you want to get in?
Yeah, I was just going to say, in either case, I think it's safe to say that Barack Obama's staff is clearly sending anonymous motivational greeting cards to Newt Gingrich saying, you can do it. I mean, you're the man. Don't let us down. I think that's clear. I mean, the longer this goes on, I mean, Barack Obama, besides the job stuff, he's loving this. I mean, how could you not?
And Republicans said something similar in 2008 when Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama went all the way to June. But then it wasn't vituperative. It wasn't personal. It wasn't ugly. And that's the difference. It made Barack Obama a better candidate. It's questionable whether this is making Mitt Romney or whoever the nominee is a better candidate.
Right.
So looking back 4 years, though, I seem to remember that PUMA, Puma movement at the end of the primaries. I don't recall it as being as non-vituperative. The
Neil.
Party unity my...
Oh, yeah. My
posterior.
Exactly. Well, spoken like the doctor you are.
That was the movement that was saying that we're not going to, you know, for Hillary supporters that weren't going to come back in the fold. That happens every 4 years.
They did, though. They did, though. But you're right about that.
Did.
I was going to disagree with Ken on that, too. It was personal. It may not have been
as
like,
ugly as this, I don't think so. No.
Well, there were no ads pointing out. There was just people being really annoyed.
That 3 a.m. ad was pretty ugly.
That was. Well, I don't know. You think it's as... Well, all right. We'll debate the ugliness meter. If you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More.
Speaking of ugly.
Oh, nice.
No, I didn't mean that.
because you talk for a living, so we don't know what you meant, right?
This is my last day on the show, right?
Exactly. Yeah, okay. If you're just on this floor, if you're just joining us, this is Tell Me More from NPR News. I'm Michelle Martin. Ken.
Sorry.
If you're listening to our weekly Barbershop Roundtable, we're joined by freelance journalist Jimmy Israel, National Review contributor Neil Minkoff, Sports Illustrated reporter Pablo Torre, Three Gentlemen, and NPR's political junkie Ken Rudin. Back to you, Jimmy.
Thanks, Michelle. All right, well, we move from a little infighting to the hard hits of professional football. NFL officials are still dealing with news that some players are getting paid to injure their opponents, not after the game in the parking lot, but on the field of play, Michelle, if you can believe that.
Well, you know, this is where I'm interested to hear what Pablo has to say about this, because this was an NFL investigation, and it and former defensive coordinator Greg Williams, at the time that he was at the Saints, and also it appears that when he was at the Redskins, somehow participated in this bounty system where players were paid for hard hits, even to knocking people out of the game. And the public reaction to this has ranged from, this is terrible, to, you know, duh, you know, this is how the game is played. And I'll just play a short clip from Alex Brown. He's a former Bears and Saints defensive, and he's talking on a sports radio show earlier this week. Here it is.
I'm not here to talk about whether or not it was money to put a guy out or not. there were instances where players would say, well, first guy get a sack, first guy get an interception. I mean, you get $100 or something like that. You can knock a guy out of the game and do it legally.
So I just got to ask, you know, Pablo, what's your reporting indicate here? Is that this was widespread? Because some guys are saying, hey, this is like dinner for the first guy here. And then other people are saying people on some of these special teams could match their salaries.
Yeah.
So that's a whole different kettle of fish.
Yeah, I think there's a spectrum of the magnitude. I think this, what the Saints did, was clearly on the upper end of that spectrum. It was intense. It was codified. And that's the difference when you talk about the NFL rulebook. It clearly went against the letter of the law. The question for me is, I mean, where I fall on this is that it doesn't really go against the spirit of the law. I mean, the NFL, I mean, you could hear talk to players for days and they'll tell you that the way you change games, I mean, Neil knows this, the Giants-Patriots Super Bowl, you know, they hit Tom Brady. And that was the plan, to make Tom Brady fear the Giants' physical presence. And that's a part of the game that even if it's not illegal or legal, and certainly there are referees to make that distinction in the field of play, but those hits, I mean, the physicality of it, you know, you talk about a bounty system, talk about contracts. I mean, the reason guys are paid millions of dollars is to make the other players on the field physically intimidated. And legal or illegal hits, hard hits, have always been part of the game. So for me, there is a little bit of the duh element, because even if it's not codified, guys are being encouraged to do this with high fives, butt slaps, however else. It's just that the Saints were dumb enough to put it in paper and actually have an organized system.
Mm. Well, Jimmy, what do you think? I don't know. Neil, I guess. Neil, you want to jump
in? Yeah, I was trying to... My point is, this was what worries me about this going forward. So, you know, a bounty system seems unacceptable, but as we're talking about it here, it becomes increasingly unclear where the line is drawn.
Right.
And where I'm sitting right now is a block away from the place where all of the research on chronic head trauma and brain trauma in NFL players has been done, and it is devastating. I mean, Jim McMahon basically says he can't remember playing in the Super Bowl. The players' union had to set up with the league and what they call the 88 Fund to help support players who get early dementia. And so what really worries me here is, why aren't the players and the players' union stepping up and saying that we're the ones that have to protect ourselves, maybe even from ourselves, and what are we going to do to draw the line between what's a good hit and what's going to leave a coworker crippled later in life?
Where is the NFL Players Union on this, Pablo?
I mean, they are in a very awkward place. I mean, Scott Fujita, who's one of the Saints linebackers, who's been very active with that very movement and with the union, is one of the guys who is on those teams. And he says that he'd only pay for legal hits, especially, you know, big tackles, interceptions, and all that. But I mean, what Neil is hitting on is exactly the point. I mean, when you have a market that validates and encourages players like, for example, James Harrison, the Steelers linebacker, who's known for being vicious, Ray Lewis, guys who have ended other players' careers with legal hits, let alone illegal hits, I mean, it's a question of, why would you personally, if you're an NFL player, be disincentivized? Would you try to do less of that if that's what's getting market value? For as much as the NFL wants to pontificate about safety issues, as long as the game is based in violence, as long as the game is more like boxing, which is something I've said in the barbershop for a while now, as long as it's more like pugilism, and it fundamentally will always be that way, then how could you possibly try and curb this problem and sort of put an end to the slippery slope?
Well, just a couple of minutes we have left. I wanted to ask Jimmy and Ken as fans, does this change the way you look at the game? I don't know.
Well,
Jimmy,
correct me if I'm wrong, Pablo, but in the MMA fighting, you know, UFC, you know, you get more money for a submission, you get more money for a knockout. So it just makes sense to me that in the NFL, you would get more money for hard hits and possibly maiming somebody. It's not right, but it's okay. It's the business. You know, if you don't like it, then we got to change the whole business of football, if that's what it's come to. So, I mean...
Well, Ken, what do you think?
I just know that...
Because they keep saying, this is not a gladiator sport. This is about yardage.
All I know is when I watch a hockey game and there's a fight, everybody cheers and cheers and you get rattled. But when there's somebody unconscious on a football field, there is dead silence there. And you look at somebody like Peyton Manning. Look, these defensive linebackers are supposed to hit, and they're paid to be hit. But to be paid extra to knock somebody out of the game in their career, you look at this city of Indianapolis, you look at Peyton Manning, you look at that whole franchise, which had been in two Super Bowls in success, and then they go with, like, you know, 0-27, you know, without their star player. Sure, this aggressive hitting, but trying to damage somebody's career, it's just beyond the pale, I think.
Mm-hmm. So can I just make one more point before we move on to Peyton, which is
We only have 2 minutes, Neil. So the reason is I wanted to ask you to go on to Peyton now and just say, look, do you think he should keep playing or not? I mean, given that he had a serious neck injury.
So I don't know what to do about that. A few months ago, even though I'm a doctor, this is so convoluted that I didn't know what to say about that. I didn't know what to think. I interviewed a spine specialist for a sports site up here, and he said, look, there is no one answer to that question. There is probably so much arthritic damage and so much potential for long-term damage that he would be against it, but there is no one right answer.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I know I'm not going to make you sort of I'm not going to make you diagnose him from a distance because that would not be right. But so, Pablo, look, you know, this is obviously a business thing. Very, you know, emotional decision. Right. It seemed to be he was due for a $28 million bonus check from the Colts. Why not just renegotiate his contract, let him sit on the bench and be a spiritual force or whatever from there?
Yeah.
What's the deal with that?
I think the deal is that Peyton Manning thinks he's a quarterback still. And they have Andrew Luck or Robert Griffin III coming in to be a franchise player who are both really good. But the saddest thing in sports is to see, you know, Joe Namath not playing for the Jets, to see Joe Montana going to, you know, the Rams or wherever it is. Peyton Manning, I mean, we all want him to be in a glass case where he's throwing a touchdown forever. And he's going to come back if he plays for the Redskins, God forbid, or for the Jets, God forbid. No offense to you, Michelle. It's going to be sad. I mean, I just don't see this ending well. And the graceful thing would be to step away. But we all know that an athlete dies twice, once when he actually physically, biologically expires, and once when he retires. Mm-mm. And that's what everybody is fighting against.
Well, how come nobody gave me any love on Hines Ward last week? I don't understand this. I was like the only one here crying. Everybody was like, whatever, it's the sport. But somehow, I don't know. I'm just feeling very alone. That's all I can say about this. I'm just feeling very, I'm not angry. I'm just very hurt.
Michelle, I'm here for you, Michelle.
Yeah. Ken's back.
Goodbye. Ken Rudin is NPR's political editor. He was here with me in our Washington, D.C. studio. Jimmy Israel is a freelance journalist and presidential fellow at Case Western Reserve University. He was with us from member station WCPN in Cleveland. Pablo Torre is a reporter for Sports Illustrated. He was with us from our NPR studios in New York. And Dr. Neil Minkoff, he is a doctor turned healthcare consultant. He's a contributor to the National Review, and he was with us from Boston. Gentlemen, thank you all so much.
Thank you so much.
Yep.
And that's our program for today. I'm Michelle Martin, and this is Tell Me More from NPR News. Let's talk more on Monday.